this ministry on some levels, what it means to follow Jesus' disciples. And our baptism is often recognized in many ways, no matter what tradition we're from, as the first steps. And so we're going to see more of that. But I'm going to propose something else, that even though we sort of take a progressive view of what baptism can be, expanding on the notion that you have to be baptized to be saved, even with all of the progressive language and theology around it, baptism in general can still be a paradigm of exclusion. It still sets up an us and them, doesn't it? Even in our progressive way of thinking, those who are baptized are in, and those who are not get to stay on the edge. It's sort of like we're creating our own progressive limbo. And no doubt, even our progressive understanding in the UCC, I promise you there are many churches and communities who fall on the spectrum of understandings of what baptism is or should be. Probably right in here, we run that gamut. And so what does baptism, or what should baptism, mean for us in this century? And maybe it's that it has a multitude of meanings that we haven't even explored yet. Now, listen, this is a struggle that's been going on since the early church. Early Christian theology struggled with seeing the person and the body of the person as something to honor. The body was something to shame. In fact, in order to explain the incarnation, early church theologians, and I am doing a ridiculous reductionistic perspective of this, but you haven't been to seminary, so you don't know that. Don't. And I'm her friend. How could God enter humanity unless it was through another God? So somewhere in the mix, Jesus had to be transformed from a human being who lived in a wretched body to a divine entity in order to explain and legitimize the incarnation. Because let's face it, we are all born into a filth-infested, sinful body, redeemable only in a theology which states that Jesus had to die for us. Instead of understanding as the idea of the incarnation as a reminder, not a one-time event, but a reminder that God is willing to enter humanity all the time, to become a participant in the muck of actually desiring to live with us and not apart from us. And even though we may today have a more progressive, compassionate, rational, and even logical understanding, theologically and culturally, we have been taught to be disconnected with our bodies. The idea that our bodies are horrifically imperfect, unlovable, distorted, and something of which we should be ashamed is a common way of us seeing ourselves. This theology is what disconnects us from that exact thing. It disconnects us from the beauty of our bodies, in which God dwells, thus claiming us from the beginning, baptized or not, as sacred. Let's go back. In this reading, there's one word that stands out for me more than any other word, and I wanted to, she knows, because when they were reading this morning in Percolate and they read it, I asked, is this word in there? And it wasn't in all of them, so you can't say it. There's one word that stands out more than any other. Take a guess. Beloved. Did you tell her? Okay. Now, some may argue that this is the exact phrase. This is my beloved son with whom I am pleased. That this is the exact phrase which should convince us that we are very different from Jesus. The statement which lifts him so far out of reach that we can only feel like wretched pieces of humanity, incapable of reaching where he is. Rachel Held Evans, in her book, Searching for Sunday, offers this. Jesus did not begin to be loved at the moment of his baptism, nor did he cease to be loved when his baptism became but a memory. Baptism simply named the reality of his existing and unending belovedness. Catherine Matthews quotes novelist Marilynne Robinson, when she says, there is a reality in blessing, which I take baptism to be primarily. It doesn't enhance sacredness. It just acknowledges it. And there is power in that. In other words, our sacredness has always existed. All of y'all are sacred. And all of you is sacred. The problem is, if we fail to acknowledge our sacredness, how can we ever expect to see the sacredness in another? How can we claim inclusion and openness when we don't affirm our own bodies as being sacred? How do we demonstrate sustainable hospitality to friends, families, enemies, to trees, water, earth, air, the universe, if we do not acknowledge our own sacredness? It is beyond time to readjust our way of understanding baptism, not as a ritual of salvation or of exclusionary inclusion, did you get that, into a specific club, or as an effort to live as we wish in the here and now while claiming some heavenly reward later when we say, okay, I believe now. Baptism does not enhance sacredness, but acknowledges it. We are not loved at the beginning of baptism, but rather we recognize that we are already beloved and have been since our birth. It becomes very difficult to proclaim and demonstrate a belief that all is sacred if we do not embrace it for ourselves. Are you getting my message here? Our minds are sacred. Our bodies are sacred. Bodies with wrinkles and with weight fluctuations. Bodies of different shapes and differently abledness. Of different skin color and hair or lack thereof. Of its sexual orientation, of its gender identity, its love for broccoli and chocolate and chips. It doesn't matter. Our bodies are sacred as they are. They were from the beginning, they are today, and they always will be, no matter what resolution you come up with. So I chose to read this magazine on health and fitness, and much to my wife's chagrin, theologically. I'm not just going to look at this idea of how we look at our bodies and weight. What if we stopped focusing on weight psychologically or physically or even medically? I'm going to look at theologically. And when you ask something theologically, it asks one important question. Do you know what it is? Where is God in this story, in this conversation? And this story says theologically that God is inherent in the body, the one that we criticize so deeply. This sacred body, which is desiring of love and acceptance and compassion and understanding and absolutely no judgment. This body in which I believe dwells the spirit, the spark, the essence of the divine. Knowing this, how could we possibly treat this sacred body with anything less than love and devotion? It is certainly the beginning of a new year. And let's be clear, it has not started well. But it is a beginning nonetheless. And it is a time when we start to commit ourselves, resolve ourselves to do certain things. From a church speak, that means we're going to get more involved, we're going to be better disciples and everything else. But rather than be overwhelmed with resolutions which emanate typically from judgment and self-loathing, we can instead come from a place of acknowledging first, before we get into the business of the work. We have to first acknowledge our sacredness. Then when it comes time to reaffirming our resounding yes to the call of discipleship, we can wholeheartedly look for and see the sacredness in all creation, thus making our work a little easier. Just imagine if we can see ourselves as sacred and then see every other piece of creation as equally sacred. Just imagine what we will then be able to accomplish. Amen?